Welcome to Morgan Lewis Podcast Central. This is a podcast recording from Morgan Lewis's May 1st, 2014 7th Annual Conference, Advanced Topics in Hedge Fund Practices. Morgan Lewis partners Jed Wider and Timothy Levin chaired this 12-part in-depth discussion of U.S. and international advanced hedge fund topics focusing on manager and investor perspectives. Part 3, Developments in Hedge Fund Terms, Asks and Gets. Jed Wider, Lewis Singer, and Christopher Lutowski will discuss the current hedge fund terms and conditions environment from the perspective of institutional investors and hedge fund managers. Now, on to the podcast.
Today's panel, we're going to discuss a number of very specific issues. We're going to discuss MFN provisions, accelerated withdrawal rights, and requests that institutional investors are making in the marketplace. We'll also take a closer look at the payment of withdrawal proceeds, including the implementation of gates and various in-kind distributions. Why don't we begin today's panel with Lewis, who will discuss some MFN issues.
Good morning. There's an aphorism that sums up MFN and perhaps a more broadly side letter negotiations between fund sponsors and fund investors, and the aphorism is, where you stand depends on where you sit. Another way to look at these negotiations was expressed by Neil Young in a song when he said, be on my side, I'll be on your side. And those of you under 40 can Google who Neil Young is. Now, I'm not aware, and perhaps other people in the room are, but I'm not aware of any significant institutional investors who don't ask for MFN and other side letter provisions. Now, on the private equity side, side letters have been around since the mid-80s. MFN has been around since the mid-80s. And there is certainly a shrinking number of private equity funds, usually in the venture capital space, that you can point to, who say no side letters permitted. Well, I think it's easy enough to predict that the number of hedge funds that will not have side letters in the future will also shrink dramatically, as they have been in the last few years. But side letters present significant challenges. First of all, there are the fiduciary challenges, since managers must treat all investors fairly. There are regulatory challenges. Managers have to comply with disclosure requirements mandated by, here in the US, the SEC, in England, by the FCA. But yet, what is required to be disclosed is not at all clear. And finally, there are the administrative challenges. For those of you on the investor side, receiving very thick compendiums of side letter provisions that take a lot of time to go through to elect provisions for MFN status. But on the sponsor side, to make sure that you are notifying investors of when they have side letters to elect via their MFN. If we look at the first slide, as Jed mentioned, this is a panel on asks and gets, although there's probably a more elegant term for that. So what do investors request? What would an investor's ideal request be for a side letter and MFN provision? Well, first of all, we want a representation that the general partner, the manager, that all side letters that already are in existence have been disclosed. As for future side letters, an investor will want notice and copies of all future side letters, which raises kind of a, if you will, metaphysical question, which is, what is a side letter? Where an investor sends a DDQ and gets a response from a manager that contains representations or promises, is that a side letter? Investor will also want its MFN to be applicable to all provisions, not including those that touch on regulatory or policy reasons. Thirdly, an investor in an ideal situation will want a side letter to have an MFN that is automatic, meaning that you opt out of side letter provisions rather than having to opt in. And then finally, an investor will want to have its MFN provision apply to all side letters, even for those that are between the sponsor and investors with larger commitments. But then you say, well, what is a larger commitment? If an investor has a certain amount of money committed to a particular hedge fund with a manager, but then has other amounts committed to a different strategy, or perhaps even to an illiquid strategy, does that count for purposes of MFN? In the next three slides, we have some sample side letters. So these are, as Judd said, well, what is the bid and the ask? What actually comes out? So the next three slides are just representative examples of where MFN negotiations came out. And in the first one, as far as existing side letters concerned, the investor received disclosure of all existing side letters except for those with affiliates. As for future side letters, again, in this particular negotiation, the result was that there was tiering. Side letters with larger investors were not included. As far as terms are concerned, and you see this frequently in side letters and MFN provisions in hedge funds, that there was a limitation on the types of provisions that would be covered by MFN. In this particular side letter, it was limited to liquidity and fees, so you'll note that it didn't cover transparency or items such as capacity. In this side letter, there were carve-outs. In this particular case, those for applicable laws, regulations, or policies were carved out. Here, it was an opt-in rather than an opt-out, and the investor had 30 days to do so. In this particular side letter, it was all or nothing, meaning you could have your side letter, you could have somebody else's side letter, but that's rare. The more usual MFN provision says you can't pick and choose within a provision. So, for example, if an investor has lower management fees because it is giving up a higher performance fee, you can't just choose the lower management fee without also giving up the higher performance fee. In this one, there was no disclosure of existing side letters, none at all. And as for future side letters, there was tiering. The terms were limited. The carve-out contained a carve-out granted to friends and family, as well as for tax, legal, regulatory issues. Here, the investor election had to be done within 15 days, and then any terms were subject to corresponding obligations, which means that if you were going to get greater transparency, there were additional restrictions relating to confidentiality. I wanted to mention just one thing, which is that there are areas, a couple areas I think worth mentioning, where there's mutual concern between sponsors and investors. Both managers and investors want side letters to be enforceable, and so the practice pointer there is that make sure the governing documents of the fund permit side letters so that they're enforceable. Secondly, if all the investors are going to get MFN and entitled to the same rights, then the practice pointer there is put it in the fund documents themselves rather than have side letters, which will save not only the problem of having to review all the side letters and notify investors, but more importantly, it will save one of the burdens, which is that the side letters will vary as to what the requirements are.
Thanks, Lewis. All right, we're going to take a look at accelerated withdrawal rights. Typically, within the market, we see very often accelerated withdrawal rights provided to investors, but limited to typically a very finite universe. And that finite universe usually consists of, if any, various key person events, however those key person events are defined in the fund documents. But what we've seen in the marketplace are typical requests by institutional investors for prompt notification of various types of breaches of the underlying fund documents, including failure to value the fund assets in accordance with valuation procedures, also breach of the fund's standard of care as specified in the fund's operative documents as well. And supplementing that request for notification with regard to those types of breaches is the request by investors for an immediate withdrawal right in the event that there has been a breach, and a withdrawal right that's not subject to a gate or lockup or holdback or suspension or fee or some type of penalty. We're going to take a look at two model side letters that deal with the issues of breaches following this particular slide. I just want to contrast these particular asks by investors with what we typically see in a fund of one scenario. Often in a fund of one scenario, it's very often that an investor will in fact be provided prompt notification with regard to those types of breaches and also have some sort of accelerated withdrawal right as well with regard to those breaches. If we look at the next slide, this investor was provided with notification of any breach of the fund documents that were likely to have a material impact on investors generally. Often a materiality standard is used in this context with regard to notification. But here, there was no accelerated withdrawal right. If we look at the next side letter, here, prompt notification was provided with regard to a breach of the standard of care, a material breach of the fund documents or side letter. And here, unlike in the prior side letter, there was notification also provided with regard to a simple breach of the fund documents or side letter that's not cured within 5 business days of the fund documents. Often a cure period is used to the extent that the breach is capable of being cured, either with respect to a simple breach or with regard to a breach in general. And here, unlike the prior side letter, there was a right to withdraw on the next withdrawal date without any gate or lockup or holdback. In the next issue, regulatory and legal claims, often we see institutional investors requesting prompt notification of non-routine investigations of securities law violations, findings of securities law violations, a conviction or a plea of nolo contendere or guilty plea to a financially oriented crime or a felony or a crime involving fraud, a violation of ERISA or fund assets becoming plan assets under ERISA, and an IRS audit of the fund. We've also seen investors also requesting immediate withdrawal rights in the event that those events do occur, once again without any gate or lockup or holdback. And here also, just to contrast this with funds of one, very often in the fund of one scenario, we see these types of notifications being provided to investors, being requested and being provided, but also accelerated withdrawal rights with regard to those events as well. If we take a look at the sample side letter that follows, in this instance, notification was provided with regard to a formal investigation of which the GPR manager or a key person is a target, and also where a Wells notice was issued or an enforcement proceeding was initiated. Here, these events are obviously more tailored than the typical ask that we usually see for notice of non-routine investigations. Also, notification was provided to the extent that there was a subpoena, which might have a material adverse effect on the management of the fund, or a finding of material violation of the securities laws, or once again, a conviction or a guilty plea with regard to a felony or fraud. But also, in this instance, there was no accelerated withdrawal right. If we take a look at the next side letter, here, prompt notification was provided with regard to an investigation reasonably likely to result in an enforcement proceeding. It's not uncommon to see a qualification with regard to reasonably likely. Notification was also provided for Wells notice or enforcement proceeding involving specifically a securities law violation, also for a finding of securities law violation and also a felony or fraud. But here, a right to withdraw was also provided on the next withdrawal date without any gate or lockup or holdback. Let's take a look at the next issue, which is the issue of changes to the fund in general. Typically, we see institutional investors requesting notification with regard to specific issues associated with changes to the fund. In a recent study, the number one reason for institutional investors redeeming out of a fund was performance. But the number two and number three reasons why investors redeem out of a fund were specifically for changes to the investment objective or strategy of the fund. And in that study, 29% of investors decided to redeem because of concerns over strategy drift, and 17% of investors decided to redeem because of changes to the internal portfolio strategy. It's very common for institutional investors that we've seen asking for prompt notification with regard to changes to the fund's investment objective or strategy, changes to the fund's corporate structure, which is sometimes qualified by having an adverse effect on the investor or by materiality. Also, prompt notification with regard to the amendment to the fund documents. Sometimes this is qualified by having an adverse effect on the investors. Notification with regard to an amendment of the fund's valuation procedures, also sometimes qualified by materiality. Use of soft dollars outside 28E, but also notification with regard to key person event changes, and also changes in senior investment and operations personnel. Very often that is limited to senior personnel as opposed to junior personnel. And very commonly we'll see institutional investors requesting immediate withdrawal rights in those specific events. Once again, on the fund of one side, notification is very often provided in these instances, as well as accelerated withdrawal rights. Taking a look at the side letter that follows here, notification was provided for material changes to strategy, substantive changes to corporate structure, amendment to the fund docs was qualified by materiality, amendment to the fund's valuation procedures was qualified by materiality, and here there was no accelerated withdrawal right. But in side letter number two, notification was provided to material changes in the strategy, material changes in the corporate structure, and here there was a right to withdraw without any gate or lockup prior to the material change in this strategy, and a right to withdraw on the next withdrawal date upon a material change in the fund's corporate structure. So once again, qualified by materiality. And lastly, we very often see investors requesting notification with regard to changes to the service providers. So notification in the ownership or control of the GP or the manager, bankruptcy or insolvency, material adverse changes to the business of the GP or the manager, and then changes to true third-party service providers, the admin, the prime broker, custodian, auditor, and often legal counsel as well, sometimes coupled with accelerated withdrawal requests. Just taking a quick look at the sample side letter here, the change in ownership was limited to 5%. Change in control was defined under the Advisors Act, so typically a 25% threshold of the GP or the manager. Material adverse change in the business of the GP or the manager that has a material adverse effect on its ability, and a change in the fund's admin or auditor. And very similar thing with regard to side letter number two as well. Let's take a closer look now at some of the amendment of the fund document issues.
So we wanted to turn to three different areas where we've seen developments in investors' requests for accelerated withdrawal rights. When the relationship between an investor and a fund has changed, like life or in love. Specifically, when the fund has proposed amendments that an investor doesn't agree to, when insiders at the fund have withdrawn above a certain threshold, or when an investor's continued investment would violate its applicable law or regulation. In these three circumstances, hedge fund relationships could inspire country music songs. You've changed, I'm changing too. You have one foot out of the door, but I'm beating you to it. I'm breaking all the rules, so let me quit you. We've seen a wide variety of different gets. Of course, in any of these topics, there's a wide range of negotiation. These are just some samples. So with amendments, what we've seen is an agreement oftentimes by managers to provide notice of material amendments of the fund documents, or an amendment that would permit side pockets, or material amendments to the valuation procedures. But in this particular instance, there was no accelerated withdrawal right. In the second example, there was an accelerated right. So prior to the effective date of the amendment, an investor was permitted to withdraw if it did not consent to specific types of amendments, and specifically those where it would affect its fees, its withdrawal rights, its right to receive reporting, its limited liability, or affect the tax treatment. In other instances, we've seen where a fund may not agree to a prior effective withdrawal right, but may agree to a conversion to a static class. So if you don't agree to an amendment, sometimes an amendment that would have an adverse effect on the investor, to permit the investor to stay at the current rights, and then they can withdraw at the next available withdrawal date in due course. The next area is withdrawal by insiders. Increasingly, investors are asking for notice of when insiders, key persons, other senior investment personnel, et cetera, are withdrawing above a certain threshold, typically 25%. They want to ensure that they have notice so they can get out at the same time and that their withdrawal will not be subject to any of the penalties or limitations. And what have we been seeing? We've been seeing movement. Managers agreeing to provide this type of notice, oftentimes at a 25% threshold on a 12-month rolling basis, excluding withdrawals by managers for tax purposes or when they're withdrawing incentive compensation. But in this specific example, there was no accelerated withdrawal right. In the second one, there was also notice of a withdrawal by insiders above a certain threshold. But they had the right to withdraw at the same time as the manager. And in this case, they were given 5 business days notice. So it's not a long period of time, but it gave the investor comfort that they would have sufficient time to consider a withdrawal. The next area is where continued investment would violate their own applicable law, regulation, or policy. So this is typically in a regulated space where the investor is subject to statutes or regulations, and in the event that after they make their investment, there's a change in those laws or regulations, and they want to ensure that their side letters contain a provision allowing them to get out if their continued investment would violate those laws, whether it's securities laws, ERISA, or comparable state law, or other specific statutes. And particularly, they want not just an accelerated withdrawal right, but that withdrawal right not to be subject to any limitations or penalties. What have we been seeing? There has been pushback by managers. In this case, the manager agreed to allow the investor to be deemed to be withdrawn as an investor, but their capital remained. And in that case, their capital was subject to the regular withdrawal provisions of the fund documents. So they would be permitted to withdraw their capital at the next available withdrawal date, but they at least were deemed withdrawn. In the second sample, the manager agreed to allow an immediate withdrawal right with one carve-out if the withdrawal would have a material adverse effect on all the other investors. And if that occurred, if there wasn't a material adverse effect on other investors, again, the investor in this case would be deemed withdrawn, and then their capital proceeds would be paid in accordance with the fund documents. The next area I want to turn to is a couple developments we've been seeing in terms of the payments of withdrawal proceeds. Specifically, when investors get paid and how they get paid, withdrawal gates and distributions in kind. These terms lead to some interesting negotiations. In the case of divorces between investors and funds, again, like those in country music songs. I can't wait, open the gate, it's over, so hand it over in cash. So with the withdrawal gate, what we've been seeing are developments in fund documents to address how long a withdrawal gate can apply, because without any type of limit, it can go on in perpetuity. A standard investor ask is that the withdrawal gate cannot apply for more than 1 year, either if it's a monthly liquidity for 12 months or for 4 quarters. And that also that the withdrawal gate apply equally pro rata to all investors. In the couple examples we have, the first one agreed to basically pay out over the course of a year. And the second one, it was the 5th quarter, and applying equally across all investors. In distributions in kind, what we've been seeing are investors requesting prior notice of any distribution in kind, and the right to an investor to elect whether or not it can receive a distribution in kind, in which case the GP or the manager agreed to use best efforts to liquidate the assets. What have we been seeing? Again, there's a range across the board. Sometimes there's no agreement. Sometimes there's agreement to have the investor's consent. In these two examples, there was agreement to provide prior notice. And if the investor requested, the manager would either liquidate or create a liquidating vehicle. In the second example, again, prior notice, best efforts to liquidate, an agreement not to distribute in kind if it would violate the investor's applicable law.
That brings us to the conclusion of this panel. Thank you very much.
To listen to other panels from the 2014 7th Annual Advanced Topics in Hedge Fund Practices Conference, visit Podcast Central at morganlewis.com. If you have any questions or would like more information on the topics addressed in this podcast, please contact a Morgan Lewis attorney at morganlewis.com. This podcast is provided as a general informational service to clients and friends of Morgan Lewis & Bockius, LLP. It should not be construed as and does not constitute legal advice on any specific matter, nor does this message create an attorney-client relationship. These materials may be considered attorney advertising in some states. Please note that any prior results discussed in the material do not guarantee similar outcomes. Read more about Morgan Lewis and its hedge funds practice at morganlewis.com/hedgefundsresources.